Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Well, hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I'll be with you for the next half hour. In a few moments, I'll be shining the spotlight on the second special assembly of the Synod of Bishops for Africa. By bringing you an exclusive conversation with the Cardinal Archbishop of Khartoum, Gabriel Zubair Wako, who tells me that what's going on in Darfur is just peanuts, if you put it in a broader picture. And then I'll also be speaking to Sister Felicia Harry, Superior General of the Missionary Sisters of Our Lady of the Apostles, who hit the headlines this week with her statement regarding the empowerment of women in the church. In reality, she's a gentlewoman, despite the fact that the bishops now tease her by calling her power woman. I heard one prelate doing so with my own ears. Well, thank you for joining me once again. Here in the Vatican, the second special assembly of the Synod of Bishops for Africa, which began on the 4th of October, is into its second week. It actually ends on the 25th of October. So the bishops there continue their reflections on the Church's role in promoting reconciliation, justice and peace. One of the people I was lucky enough to speak to this week is the Cardinal Archbishop of Khartoum in Sudan, Gabriel Zubair Wako. He was kind enough to sit down with me for a long chat during coffee break, as you'll hear from the background sound, rather unfortunately.
One thing we would like to many of our bishops and even the whole church to know that there is a church in the Sudan. And the Catholic Church is functioning properly because, well, during all the years of the war, we were the only group that really stood with the people, and the people who gave directions, also tried to give directions to the government and to protest against some of the things the government was doing. Like in Khartoum, for instance, we took up some of the social needs of the people, especially the need for education. And since in the 80s, I had opened 120 primary schools. It brought the number of pupils to 42,000. And it was just an effort to get these children out from the streets and to ensure that in the future we will have, let us say, educated and prepared lay people who could take up the defense of the poor, we could say, and work for their own, for their development and so on. Unfortunately, this program we had to begin to tune it down because we ran out of funds. And those who were assisting us also decided not to continue to help us. They said Europe itself is in a financial crisis and the people are not prepared to support educational programs, especially in schools. They told us the schools should be run by the government. Well, I took some of them to the camps and said, are these the kind of people that our government, Sudan now, is going to take care of? If you're just taking care of them, why do you see these children here when all the rest are in the school? And the argument is not being taken up because, first of all, this is spread in Europe here that we open the schools in order to prevent those children from becoming Muslims. And that was not our original idea. Our original idea that these children should be able to stand on their own feet like other people, but at a higher level of intellectual preparation. And then, of course, I asked them, why do you object to the church opening schools to keep its children Christians? And we don't object to the Muslims taking in the children and making them Muslims. This is not a question of the human rights that is at stake. And anyway, it seems the argument is not being taken up by people. And so the result is we had to scale down from 120 schools. We have come down to about 22 per parish. One for girls, one for boys. And we said, but we must not scale down the quality of the education we give to the children. But it is such a sad thing to see how many children are being thrown out of school of schools that really takes care of them. And it's one of the sad things in our situation now.
I believe there are a lot of displaced people in Khartoum, people who fled the violence in the south. What's going on exactly? Can you explain?
Of late, they said there is a peace agreement. Yet in principle, there should be no displaced people in Khartoum. And I told them, these people, they will not return now. It will take time and maybe a long time because some of these people have been here over 20 years. So many of the young people do not know what Southern Sudan is. They do not even know their own native language. And they are used to this life here in towns and so on. It will be difficult. And of course, the result is that now, 4 years after the peace agreement, a lot of them are still in Khartoum. Also because of the bad governance in the south, because of violence, there is too much violence in the south now.
Tell me about that violence.
It is tribal. People call it tribal because it is one tribe against another and so on and so on. But we see there's a political thing being used by the leaders in order to secure for themselves followers. It is they who distribute the arms and so on, because I don't think the arms can just get into the country without somebody noticing it. And that they are being used against innocent people, innocent villages, and yet they take no steps in order to stop it. But our protests don't seem to say anything, and the protests of the people, so people say, what will we go to the south for, just to be killed? We ran away from there because we were afraid to die. Now you want us to go back to die? Even in the past, there were tribal violence, but people were not just killing at random like that. Fights used to be on grazing ground, access to the water, and so on. But now they just attack the villages. And the victims now are more children and women, and not the men. The men, maybe because they run away or they know how to defend themselves, but this, the massacre of children and women, that is really a very painful part of it.
You use the word massacre. Massacre is a strong word.
Massacre, because it is killing without aim. Get a group of people together and just shower bullets on them. We prefer to call it massacre, not just killing, but we cannot understand why should children be killed, why should women be killed and burn, why the houses are to be burned down and all these sort of things. Not even a situation of war would justify something like that. And then even the central government doesn't do anything in order to stop it. Because even if the South has some kind of autonomy, it's still a part of the Sudan. And the central government should take seriously order in that part of the country if the order is not being kept. These are the kind of situations that make it so bad. And our influence is on the people who could be responsible for these things is very weak. People say we are saying good things, but then nobody follows the good things we are saying. We would have to talk and speak Arabic, which we ourselves are not very competent in, or speak English, which they cannot understand at all. That we try other simple ways of getting the idea through, especially through our justice and peace commissions, and it's something that's building up in the people. But we are still a long way to go. To add to all of it is the financial constraints all our dioceses are undergoing, which makes work very difficult, because with the peace agreement, or in the years leading to the peace agreement, we lost some of our best workers. Just said, there is no money. There's no money in the church. We are going elsewhere where we can get whatever we need.
How can the international media help?
Their influence is very weak, because I think most of the media, what they say, political correct things. If I said, in this village here, so many people were massacred, and they were massacred, government, military, and so on, then the Sudanese government comes, no, this is a lie. Nothing has happened like that. People are all peaceful. And then they send films and so on, which portray the people as living peacefully and no problem and so on. So they say there's nothing. In the past now, I was hitting on this question of freedom of religion and of practice. Now, when these people come to Khartoum, they go on Sundays to the churches, and they said, oh, the churches are full, there is no persecution. I asked them, what do you understand by persecution? Say, do you expect to see Christians hiding or Christians being killed and so on? But I said, there are so many other forms of persecution, and this is going on here. And then don't forget that when there is problem among for the faithful, they tend to come together more strongly. So these are some of the problems we have. Yeah. And then, of course, the financial part of it, it seems that we can get help from nobody.
How are you present in the South? Are you present as a church in the South?
Yeah, present, because in the South there are five dioceses, all the principal towns, bishops and priests. Because in the Southern Sudan there are several states. I think five states, and then within those states there are other civil divisions and so on. So it is
the only place that ever gets to the media is Darfur.
That is what we try to tell people, let people understand, that Darfur is just one of the places where suffering is. Geographically, it is about one third of the Sudan where nothing is happening. What is happening in Darfur is just peanuts. 2.5 million Southerners have been massacred during the war, and about 4 million were displaced. And at that time, nobody was talking about it. We tried to talk about it, but we were hushed down and not to talk about those things because it causes trouble.
Do you work together with the other churches?
Yes, we try to work with them. We have the Sudan Council of Churches, and the Catholic Church is a member of the Sudan Council of Churches.
And what are the other churches?
There is the Episcopalian Church, there is the Presbyterian Church, there is the Coptic Orthodox Church, there is the Sudan Interior Mission, and then the African Inland Church, and what else now? There are a lot of few small churches there. I think officially there should be 11 churches, I think.
Having said all this, is there any hope for the future?
There is hope, because we don't give up. And we keep working because of that hope that something is going to change. If, say, our own Christians take up the message and work upon it, hope will come. It is definitely some hopeful thing when I consider that about 20 years ago, there were so few Southern Sudanese and other people from the neglected areas in the universities. Now we have so many of them that it is a consoling. If they take up their tasks seriously, maybe we need to increase also our apostolate to this educated group of people.
You said earlier that the church is persecuted. In what way is it persecuted?
Well, the question of the rights of the Christians, this has not yet been determined. Although there are a lot of declarations of policies, change of policies regarding the rights of Christians. But in the South, I think that there is people are a bit more relaxed. They don't know that kind of persecution we have. And so the churches can, as I say, build places of prayer, and they can have schools, and the priests can move around without people disturbing them and so on. But for us who are in the north, the situation is a bit more difficult. It is better than it was, but it's not yet reached the point which we could say, here we are free, we can do whatever we want. The peace agreement had decreed, for instance, that certain laws which are infringing the rights of non-Muslims should be revised. Instead, the parliament just went ahead confirming some of them to continue, and that is causing frictions. It seems that we may continue using only the churches that were built either before the war or those built during the war. But new churches are going to be difficult for us. And then we were trying to say that there should be more necessary respect for the church authorities and so on. For instance, for priests or even bishops, let us say young bishops and young priests cannot leave the country. In principle, the government expects them to do the military service, which is compulsory. And they will say, no, the priests cannot go into the military training. That is one example of it, because the same principle is not being applied to the Muslims. The Muslims, Muslim religious leaders. Because of maybe past experience or what, people are not... The Christians don't feel that they can really do whatever they want or whatever they need to do. There's always that fear. And to get a very small thing to move, you have to go to meet the authorities so many times and for so many years. It is a bit exasperating, no? We don't see the reason for it. But, I mean, even if the government takes a more positive attitude towards the churches, there are people among the religious, Muslim religious leaders who will try their best to see that those things are curbed, brought under control anyway. There is now also, there is a government committee that is for the rights of the non-Muslims. But this is a committee on paper. I was asking the people, is it because the government doesn't allow this committee to work, or is it that the kind of people they have put into those committees are people who are unable to push for anything? But certainly the social situation of the people is bad, whether they are Christians or Muslims. In August, you know, we had a very, very heavy rain that knocked down all the houses practically of all the poor people, you know, those who build their houses with mud or with the straw or these kind of things, and of course it flooded everywhere so that even movement was difficult. And I was telling the people, say, in the past, when these things happened, the Catholic Church was in the forefront of those who rushed to the help of these people. But now our financial situation has become so bad, we can't do anything.
So you feel very isolated, don't you, as a church?
Yeah, there is much isolation. We feel isolated, it's true. And not understood. I mean, during these difficult times, for instance, when there was all this, it was a real persecution. Even I myself was put under arrest for some hours. And then, of course, there was so much movement among the Christians that I think the government feared the security consequences of it, so they released me. But, I mean, during those times, just imagine that there are people who come even from Rome to say, I'm too intransigent. Of course, they were... saying, we are suffering because of our fault.
You have very sad eyes. You have seen a lot of pain, huh?
Yeah. We have seen it, yes.
And a big thank you to the Cardinal Archbishop of Khartoum in Sudan, Gabriel Zubair Wako, for taking the time to share with us these thoughts. Meanwhile, I'd like to join another of the participants at this synod, this time the Superior General of the Missionary Sisters of Our Lady of the Apostles, who operate right across Africa. Her name is Felicia Harry. She's a determined sister, originally from Ghana, who hit the headlines during the synod, as she spoke, telling the bishops that women are happy to teach catechism to children, decorate parish churches, clean, mend and sew vestments, but they also want to be on parish and diocesan councils, saying that women want to collaborate not only when already made decisions are to be implemented, but when the decisions are being made. Statements that aroused my curiosity. So I looked for her in the synod hall. She was a little fearful to start with, telling me she hadn't expected so much media exposure. Let's listen to what she told me. This is a synod of bishops for Africa. The synod of bishops means that it's mainly male.
That's right.
But one gets the impression there are very few women present in this synod. Is that correct?
Well, there are few women. If it's a synod of bishops, they have the right to decide if they want to invite the women or not. But they have invited some women. I am grateful to be here. I've been thinking about it. A lot of people have said that, you know, that there are few women. But if it's a synod of bishops, I suppose it's their right.
Mm-hmm. Have you been able to speak?
Yeah.
What did you tell the bishops?
I talked about women, religious women in the church. And I said that we should be given a more prominent role in the church, especially at the parish level. We would want to see ourselves on various councils in the parishes so that we become part of the decision-making body of the parish.
Although you're Superior General and your order is based in many countries across Africa, you're originally from Ghana, which is a reality you know well. That's where you were born, right? Mm-hmm. What is particular about the church in Ghana and women in the church in Ghana?
One thing in Ghana, the population of the church, Catholic Church in Ghana, of women, is from what I see, you know, weekdays, Sundays, at masses and at other religious activities, you see women outnumber men. That is basic. And in view of that, thing is, you would want to see women given a more active role in the church, other than just being there, being a church goer, following along, you know, tagging along, and so on. Instead of that, we want to see, let the women also take leadership roles. I'm not saying women should take up the responsibility of the parish priest, no. But they should be seen to be involved in decision-making in the parish. And see, some may argue that there are some women, but how many? And then I also think that sometimes women, you don't see them because they don't have the formation. See, that's another aspect we have to look at, forming them to take up these leadership roles.
Is there a place for formation within Ghana for women religious, or do they have to come to Rome?
Oh, we all don't have to come to Rome. There's in Ghana, apart from the secular education, there's something we have in Cape Coast for continuing formation for religious men and women. That's developmental, personal development kind of thing, and spiritual. You would want to need more, you know, in-depth training in certain aspects, and that is when you have to go out. I know there's something in Kenya, there's a university in Kenya that has programs, directions, theology, whatever. There's a place in Kenya. And for most of these spiritual or church kind of studies, you have to come out and do it.
What are the issues you're most concerned about in terms of your pastoral work in parish?
Oh, okay. I would want to touch, in terms of our pastoral activities, my congregation is into education. We are in a number of schools. Some of them are one or two private schools that we have the children, both male and female, we teach, and then we try to bring them up, catechize and all kinds of things, bring them up as we should. We have boarding houses. But then we would also want to touch the women in our parishes, women associations, the youth in our parishes. Because when you do that, you are actually helping with their formation. Because some of these youth are in public schools, they are in non-Catholic schools, and sometimes they miss out on the church's teachings. It is at the parish level that you can get them. And sometimes it's difficult, it depends on the parish priest. If the parish priest has a program going and invites you, maybe you can go there. But if you don't get invited, you don't go there. Even when you have asked, it depends on what program he has. You know. So you have to wait on him to say, oh sister, there is this here, can you come? And sometimes when you are being invited, it is at the last minute when you can do nothing.
Can I get back to the synod? You're familiar with other situations in Africa because presumably you travel around Africa a lot.
Some countries in West Africa.
So which countries do you travel to most?
I've been to Nigeria, I've been to Tanzania, and then the other French-speaking West African countries.
So in terms of your knowledge of Africa, what has struck you most about the things that have been said at this synod? Can you give me one or two examples of what you've heard that has struck you in particular?
Apart from women issues, I think migration is a big issue, and it has touched me a lot. And not only that, has it touched me, it's a real issue that almost everybody is talking about at the synod. Plus, you see things on television that really makes me question myself. How are we touching our youth at home? Are we telling them the truth? Because they want to come here. They want to come to Europe. They go through all kinds of things to come to Europe, to greener pastures that are not green. I am happy that that issue has been taken up, and I am hoping that a concrete proposition, a strong proposition, is going to be made on this issue, whole issue of migration. And our youth, and it's the whole of Africa, eh? It's not only just migration from Africa to Europe, but sometimes even within Africa, you know, foreigners are really treated badly, you know. So I am hoping that something strong is going to come out of the synod on migration.
What would you like the media to say about this synod?
I want the media to be positive. I want to say that it's a good while exercise. It's an exercise that is worth it. The church in Africa is looking at herself, seeing difficulties, the challenges, and the role they have to play. The authorities and everybody in the church has to play to kind of move the church forward. Be there for the people, for God's people. Be there. Be their spokesperson. Just be there for them. There's a lot of openness. People are not just inhibited in what they say, and which is good. You know, they say situations as they are, and everybody's hopeful that there's going to be a lot of good from this. So I hope that the press sees that.
The good news from Africa.
Good news from Africa, yeah.
Warm thanks there to Sister Felicia Harry, Superior General of the Missionary Sisters of Our Lady of the Apostles. On a more personal note, I'd like to add that, point of fact, she's a very gentle woman, whom the bishops now tease by calling her Power Woman. I heard one prelate doing so with my own ears, and Sister Felicia took it in her stride. Well, that brings me up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Bye for now. You've been listening to the English programme of Vatican Radio, Laudetur Jesus Christus.